This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 2nd of April 2009, and today I'm joined by Jim Stewart, the CEO of Stewart Media, a Melbourne-based SEO marketing and streaming media content development company. Jim Stewart has been an internet consultant since 1995, having consulted on some of Australia's first corporate websites, as well as national broadcasters in Pakistan, Malaysia, Fiji, Sri Lanka, and Brunei. He has contributed to programs on ABC Radio, Channel 9, Network 10, and numerous other media outlets. Jim Stewart, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thanks, James. Nice to be here.
Well, Jim, why don't you start by getting into a little more depth about your background in internet technologies and your company, Stewart Media?
Okay, thanks, James. Stewart Media started about 10 years ago, specifically working with new media technologies. So we were doing a lot of streaming back then. This is before the days of YouTube and all the rest of it. But we were doing lots of news shows for the likes of Yahoo, AOL, Microsoft Windows Media Player, and a bunch of other media outlets at the time, online media outlets. After the dot-com era came and went, we then started focused more on search marketing. And we've been doing search marketing for about the last 6-7 years.
I see. Well, today on the Corbett Report, we're discussing the Australian Communications and Media Authority's Internet Blacklist and its implications. But for those international listeners in the audience who might not know about the topic, why don't you start by explaining what the ACMA is and what it's proposing to do?
Yeah, okay. The Australian Communications and Media Authority, which used to just be called the Australian Communications Authority, is a body that's essentially set up to, originally they were set up to be the regulator for telephony. And that was their original, they used to be called Austel, a lot of people would know them as down here. But back in 1999, our previous federal government, which was a conservative government, they brought in an amendment to the Broadcast Services Act, which was basically a blacklist which would be brought out, which the ACMA would monitor and put sites on. So any website that didn't meet the Office of Film and Literature Classifications, normal classification guidelines, could be blacklisted. And the actual status is called refused classification. So this doesn't necessarily mean illegal material. It just means material that the Office of Film, Literature and Classification wouldn't normally give a classification to. And so the government at the time set up the blacklist, and it basically does absolutely nothing. Back in 1999, we were saying that, look, you know, you've got a blacklist, but it doesn't actually do anything, because the first site that they ever blacklisted was a site called teenagers.com.au. It had R-rated content, so this is content that you could normally just go and see at your local cinema, and they blacklisted it. The following day, that same website turned up in the US at the very same domain name. So, you know, all they did was issue a takedown notice to the local ISP where it was being hosted. So they shut down their hosting here and sent it overseas. And this is the ludicrous nature of this whole censorship issue. And the reason that they're doing it is purely to placate certain special interest groups who have power in our upper house, in our federal parliament. And that's what was happening back then in 1999. It was the then conservative government, federal government, placating a Christian senator who had the balance of power. And today the exact same thing's happening, where we have our left-wing government, or the ALP, doing the exact same thing for another Christian senator, a completely different one this time.
Well, so just to be clear, what stage of implementation is this program at? It's already underway, or it's being tested at the moment, or it's going to be developed further?
Yeah. Well, what happened 9 years, 10 years ago was the blacklist was set up. Now, what our current government is now proposing is that they then put in a mandatory internet filter at every ISP in the country so that they can then filter out content which they deem to be inappropriate or would be refused classification. So the stage that it's at the moment is we've still got a ridiculous blacklist We don't yet have this mandatory filter at the ISP level, but what will be happening and what they're doing right now is trialing the technology that they're going to use for this filter. Now, two of Australia's largest ISPs have refused to participate in the trial because they've said it's ridiculous, it can't be done, we're not interested. One of those ISPs is, of course, Telstra, who's our largest telco.
All right, so bring us up to speed on the recent uproar in Australia caused by the leaking of the ACMA blacklist on WikiLeaks.
Yeah, the way the blacklist works is that the ACMA don't go out and hunt for content. What actually has to happen is someone has to make a complaint about a particular piece of content. And then the ACMA will then go and look at that website, and then they'll go and show the website to the Office of Film Literature and Classification, and then they'll tell them whether it's refused classification or not, and then they'll blacklist it. What happened a couple of weeks ago is Mr. Clever Trousers down here in Melbourne decided that he was going to go and complain about an anti-abortion site, which had some fairly graphic images of abortion on the site. Now, the ACMA looked at the site, sent it over to the OFLC, and they said, yes, it's refused classification. So the ACMA then put it on their blacklist. That caused an uproar in itself. Then at the same time, what was happening, the same person, then went and complained to the ACMA about the WikiLeaks website and the leaked Danish blacklist, which they'd posted 12 months earlier on their site. And lo and behold, the ACMA said, yes, we're going to refuse classification to that particular page on the WikiLeaks website. WikiLeaks then got hold of the Australian blacklist and published that. And then WikiLeaks got their site, that page blacklisted, as well as the press release talking about it. Now, the problem with that was, of course, is that as soon as you start banning these things or talking about them in the media, all you're doing is putting a spotlight on the very thing that you don't want people to be looking at. And as I said on last week in one of my shows, I'd never even heard of WikiLeaks before, and I've been on the internet for a long time. But you know, as of last Thursday, there were about 11,000 pages in the Australian domain namespace talking about this WikiLeaks website, and they'd sprung up only in the last month. As of yesterday, there were about 23,000 pages in the Australian domain space talking about this WikiLeaks blacklist. So all of a sudden, all we've done is open up thousands and thousands and thousands of doorways to the most vile content, apparently, that the government doesn't want us to see. So that's where it's at the moment. And the government is taking a lot of flak at the moment, but they're sticking to their guns. They're saying we're going to persist with the trial. There has been a little sort of bit of backing down. You know, initially they said that this new filter would protect all our children from the nasty things on the internet. Now they're backing away, saying, well, it's not going to be a silver bullet. But it still doesn't look good. They're still looking at pushing something through.
And I understand that the government is even going to fine people who even so much as link to the blacklist $11,000 per day.
Correct. I mean, this is one of the, you know, the way the internet fundamentally works is with hyperlinking. That's what makes it the internet. And when the anti-abortion TV site was, and look, this is Kafkaesque in its proportions. When the abortion TV site was blacklisted, someone posted in a forum, they published the email that they got from the ACMA, because the ACMA says you can actually publish our findings. So that's what he did, put it up in a forum. Then the ACMA contacted the hosting company and said and issued them an interim link delete notice, telling them to delete that link from the forum. Or face $11,000 a day fine. Now, of the 23,000 pages that have gone up in the last week talking about WikiLeaks, I dare say a large amount of those will be linking directly to the blacklist. And this is where it gets ridiculous. There is just no way known in the world that the ACMA could possibly even try to keep up with just even one site that was getting linked to, let alone, you know, the millions and billions of pages out there that will have offensive content on it.
Well, on your blog on stuartmedia.biz, you have a number of text and video entries dealing with this topic and its implications. But why don't we start examining it from a technical perspective? Is it technologically feasible for the ACMA to really maintain the filter?
Well, not maintain it. I would look, you know, it's not clear yet whether it's going to be a dynamic filter in that it's going to, you know, act like, say, some of our spam filters where it looks at particular words or content on the page. Now, if they go down that path, the most accurate filtering that they've had over recent years will slow the internet down by about 87% or 89%, something like that. So if they don't go down the dynamic filtering path and are just going to filter out sites on the blacklist, either way, it's doomed for failure. You can achieve technically those certain things for a certain small percentage of sites. But for the thing to work well, it's going to have to be so scalable. It would bankrupt some small countries trying to fund this thing. For instance, if you have a dynamic filter, well, then you're going to slow down the net considerably and damage business, damage a range of research institutions and those sorts of things. But then you will then have technologies that spring up in its place. We've already got technologies out there that will allow people to bypass these sorts of things that are being used in countries with repressive governments, such as China. One of those technologies is called Tor, T-O-R, which will allow you to get around those sorts of things. Or you set up virtual private networks. So, yes, you can easily get around these things. It just depends on how many people get around these technologies. And what's not clear also is that what about sites that promote the circumventing of these technologies? Will they be blacklisted? And this is where we get into this whole other can of worms. The other side of the debate is that, well, if we just put the most offensive things on a blacklist, we'll just filter those out. But, you know, simply by doing that isn't going to stop that content. It's certainly not going to achieve what the government's saying it wants to achieve, and that is to, you know, stop this content getting into the country. Because as soon as you blacklist a site at a particular domain or address, it will pop up tomorrow at a different domain or address. And, you know, of course, they're not talking about things like HTTPS, which is, you know, secure HTTP. They're not talking about things like BitTorrent or other P2P technologies. They're not talking about IRC. They're not talking about all these other technologies, which most of this content is distributed via.
Well, I think that's an extremely important point. I mean, doing something like this, it's not even like classifying all the pages on every site on the internet isn't even like trying to classify all the grains of sand on a beach, because at the very least, all the grains of sand on a beach are a finite amount. But websites are springing up all the time, every day. Yeah. I mean, it's a mind-boggling task.
The grains on the sand of the beach, they're pretty much all fairly similar. The web pages, they're not.
That's true. And as you say, a lot of this content is passed through peer-to-peer file sharing, which wouldn't even be screened from the filter, from what I understand.
Yeah, correct. I mean, you know, the ignorance with the technology is mind-blowing when at our government level. When we had our Minister of Communications, Senator Stephen Conroy, come out on national television last week and say that the Queensland government had successfully hacked P2P, which just doesn't mean anything at all. It just makes no sense what he's talking about. And so when you hear statements like that from the person who's meant to be in charge, you know, it gets the soundbite on the news, the parents think they're protected, and everyone goes on their happy way. But, of course, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. And the real danger here is that, you know, we're making a whole generation complacent about the internet. You know, we're allowing parents to abdicate responsibility of looking after their children or monitoring what they're doing when they're online, or even having good education in the home or the schools about what it takes to be a good digital citizen. And these are the scary things. You know, we've had people come out in the national media this week, parents who say, you know, I just don't have time. I just, you know, I don't understand technology. My kid's so much smarter than me about the technology. But to those people, I would just say, well, the technology's not going away. So you can either choose to ignore it and suffer the consequences, or you can start looking at actively getting involved. I know all our lives are busy these days, but this is something that is here to stay, and you ignore it at your peril.
Well, then, aside from the way that this debate is being framed in the Australian media, what do you think is really at stake in this proposal? What does it mean in terms of Australians' civil liberties, and what kind of precedent would such a scheme set for online liberties throughout the developed world?
Well, I hope it wouldn't set a precedent. I hope it would be shown up to be an absolute farce. But, you know, the freedom of speech issue is, of course, the main issue. I mean, to have this blacklist is secret. It's a government blacklist. This filter will be mandatory, so you have no recourse. There have been sites that have been already put on the blacklist, some that were hacked and had offensive material were blacklisted. But the sites were fixed, but the owners of those sites had no idea that they were on a blacklist until the blacklist was revealed. So there's no recourse for anyone. It's going to ban content that you can go down and see at your local cinema. And it will be done by a bureaucrat sitting in an ivory tower in Canberra. And Australians will have no recourse. And for a country that we don't actually have a Bill of Rights or free speech enshrined in a Bill of Rights, we do actually pride ourselves as a nation of free thinkers and have the ability for free speech. But this is certainly going to, just kill that in its tracks. And, you know, when we're living in a global online world these days, it's just going to make Australian websites and Australian online space a bit of a laughing stock.
Well, in closing, what is the next step for in terms of implementing this? How likely do you think the ACMA is to go ahead with this? And what do you think about the average Australian's reaction to this proposal?
Look, I think the average Australian is just getting, unfortunately, is just getting the sound bites on the evening news. So, you know, the average Australian, because the government has framed this thing in around, you know, protecting kids from child pornography of all things, no one can argue with that to say, well, yeah, we want to protect our kids from that nasty stuff. So, you know, when you ask anybody, everybody says, well, you know, I don't like the idea of the government, controlling information, but, you know, we've got to protect our kids. So I think the vast majority of Australians are going down the path of, oh, well, you know, it's something that has to be done, or they don't really realise the total implications of what the government's proposing. The online community, on the other hand, is very vocal in making their opposition to it known. My concern is that we, back in 1999, a lot of us protested about blacklist going ahead, and it still got put through and passed. Now, we didn't follow up and try to get the thing thrown out because it was just so ludicrous and it wasn't doing anything. It was just basically costing us tax dollars, and so most of us just got on with our work. The problem with this one is that it's going to have a much larger impact on our day-to-day lives. Now, the likelihood of it getting through really depends upon the Australian Christian lobby, which has been the main proponent behind getting something like this pushed through. Unfortunately, they're being told lies by their leaders. Their leaders are basically telling them that this thing is going to protect their kids and it's going to do a lot of good. And, of course, it's going to do a lot of harm. And it really rests on whether that constituency has the ability to wake up in time and tell their representatives that maybe they should be looking at something else. We're already starting to see signs of the senator backing down, Senator Stephen Conroy backing down from some of the things he was saying earlier. But I have a feeling something is going to get passed. At what level and at what strength, I don't know. But I think even purely as a face-saving opportunity, I think the government will want to be seen to be doing something. So I think we're going to have something worse than what we've got now. How bad it's going to be, I don't know. But one thing that we can guarantee is that when governments take away liberties, they're very loath to give them back in a hurry. And, you know, that's what we're seeing now. The list was created 10 years ago, and now the current government's expanding it.
Well, we'll be definitely keeping our eyes on this situation here at the Corbett Report, and hopefully you can come back in the future to update us on the situation. But Jim Stewart, tell people once again how they can find out more about you and Stewart Media.
Oh, okay. Thanks, James. Yep, our site is stewartmedia.biz. That's stewart.biz. Or the YouTube channel is youtube.com/Jimboot, J-I-M-B-O-O-T. And on Twitter, I am Jimboot, J-I-M-B-O-O-T.
All right, Jim Stewart, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today on the Corbett Report.
Thanks, James. Appreciate your time.